Hello, everybody, Nerd Forensics listeners. This is Millicent Oriana, and tonight I am joined by
Jacob Urban
and my producer
Sophia Baca.
And tonight we are broadcasting from an undisclosed sniper's nest inside of Barnes & Noble. We're going to be talking about, of course, the world's wackiest assassins.
Millicent Oriana, culture expert. While seeking to unlock the secrets of all fandoms, she is exposed to an overload of every aspect of pop culture. Now, when asked a question about a piece of popular culture, she becomes curious. Now hosting a podcast and joined by amazing guests, she seeks to find answers and find a way to live off her talents and to make a fun podcast.
Don't make me ask questions, Saran Saran. That is not what this episode's about.
And tonight we're going to be starting our episode off by talking about Hassan II of Morocco. This is personally like a really funny one to me because it was in 1972 that this happened. So the way it happened was these two generals were going to take over Morocco and they were going to turn it into a military dictatorship. And I mean, that's not really a step up from a monarchy. It's kind of like a lateral step.
Yeah. Yeah. Nothing much really changes in that situation.
Yeah. It could be worse. Could be better. Who knows?
I mean, the Greek definition of the word tyrant was someone who takes power besides by election or lineage. So, I mean, just tyrannical rule from ancient times.
Yeah. Yeah. Although lineage to me is pretty tyrannical.
Oh, no. Yeah. Technically, that'd just be regular royalty, which I think is basically as bad.
Yeah. So he was on a plane and there was like a good like 40 people on the plane or something. So these numbnuts forgot to switch out their test rounds for when they were practicing this maneuver.
Oh.
So they started shooting the hell out of this plane with blanks, essentially. And that's the reason the plane didn't explode after they passed over it with their machine guns a bunch of times.
The prince, he was on the plane, correct?
The king, he was on the plane and he had some people with him. And I'm not sure if it was a commercial plane or I think it might have been a commercial flight.
And yeah, and these two guys were from the Air Force, essentially, and they just started strafing the plane.
Yeah, there were three of them, which I mean.
Or three.
I'm sure one of them was called Muammar.
Yeah.
One of them was probably the Arab equivalent of Larry and the other one was the Arab equivalent of Curly.
Yeah, the aircraft men will be here any minute to watch our test flight.
Yes, yes, go on. I'm palpitating.
Shut up. Just remember, if we flop, we're drafted. We've got to make good.
Hey, wait a minute. Who's going to fly the Buzzard? We don't know anything about flying.
Neither did the Wright brothers, but they flew.
But, these three numbnuts started firing their test rounds at this plane, and they did kill, like, five people, and they injured, like, 20.
Yeah, I'm sure they crippled the aircraft, too.
Yeah. Hassan, though, apparently ran up to the radio and screamed, "The king is dead! The tyrant's dead! Your mission's complete!" These three idiots turned around and landed on the airstrip, and at that time he called up the rest of the military and was like, "Yeah, those guys tried to kill me. Arrest them!"
So, yeah, that definitely did not work out for them.
Oh, yeah, one of the generals, like, was executed, like, right away, and the other one fled, and apparently Interpol caught up with him and extradited him back to Morocco.
Where I'm sure he lived to a nice, healthy old age.
Yeah, like, another week.
Okay, I mean, that can be a nice, healthy old age.
Yeah, he was, like, dead within a week getting back to Morocco, but, yeah.
So, when you attempt a coup, make sure your people are competent?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely make sure your people are competent. I mean, I can't... Let me look up the two generals' names right now. Yeah, it was Mohamed Ofkir and Mohamed Amakrane. Amakrane is the one that like, ran away.
So, yeah, the moral of that story is if you're attempting a coup, make sure the people carrying out your plot are competent, because if you don't win, you lose everything.
Yeah, and also the other thing is, like, yeah, number one, get people that are competent.
Unless you're in the United States.
Yeah, we never do that. I mean, we could do a whole episode about them trying to kill Fidel Castro with, like, a moldy wetsuit and stuff.
Come on, you gonna kill him with a pastry?
That'll make good topic for its own episode.
Just historically, aren't most coups poorly thought out?
Yes.
Yeah, it seems like it's a spur of the moment thing, I mean, a lot of the time.
You have the one where Charles Taylor and Prince Julian ate that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that probably wasn't very well thought out by anybody.
Charles Taylor and Prince Julian sound like two competitors at like the Teen Choice Awards.
They really do. But then you find out they're two Harvard educated Liberians that took over Liberia.
Oh, yeah.
And my favorite thing is he ran under the motto, they killed my mother and my father, but I'll still vote for Charles Taylor.
I mean, that's a slogan.
Yeah. I mean, it obviously wasn't a free election either, because I mean, that is a hell of a slogan.
Yeah, that's a hell of a slogan.
Well, you're free to not vote. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that's what it was. You're free to not vote.
Exactly. Those are your options.
Mm-hmm. And up next, we are going to talk about James Earl Ray. And
from Star Wars.
Yes, from Star Wars. James Earl Ray from Star Wars. Sorry, it's
been going through my head all night.
Oh, I know. Every time I say it, you know that like somebody gave him an award one time, James Earl Jones, and it said James Earl Ray on it.
Oh, no.
Oh. God. Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
On so many different levels, that's just wrong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Which, I mean, this guy was like, there's a lot of conspiracy allegations about him, like, working for the FBI and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the assassination itself isn't very wacky, but the aftermath of the assassinations would get so wacky.
To clarify for anybody who might not know, James Earl Ray assassinated Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah, he assassinated Martin Luther King Jr. and he's a white supremacist piece of shit.
So what were the kind of events of that?
Okay, so after he assassinated him, he got arrested because he was just driving around asking people if they knew anything about the Klan bounty out on Martin Luther King after he had been shot.
That sounds extraordinary. That sounds like trying to find drugs by like wearing a sign that says drugs.
That's like going to a cop and asking them if they could give you some drugs.
Police station.
Or just walking down the street, just drugs. I'm buying drugs here. Yeah. I need some drugs.
Yeah, it's like being like David Crosby and firing off a gun in the middle of a city.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's going to see you do it if you're in the middle of a city. Just bam.
Because, you know, that was like when MLK Jr. was assassinated, that was like some of the biggest news in the country, if not the world at that point.
I mean, that's why I heard that story about James Brown playing that free show just so, like, I think it was Boston wouldn't get destroyed.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, people were horrified. And
yeah, I imagine. Yeah.
But yeah, this jackass drove around just asking, like, if anybody knew, and he got arrested because of it.
Yeah,
because,
you know, he figured he was safe.
Yeah, and it's like, oh yeah, that makes a hell of an FBI hitman. If the FBI did hire him, they found the dumbest fucking hitman they could have.
I mean,
yeah, it sounds like something the FBI would do. Oh, I know.
And there were the letters that were being sent to Martin Luther King Jr. Oh, yeah,
the FBI was conspiring against him, no doubt.
There were the letters telling him that he should kill himself.
Oh, yeah. Those seemed like they were, I mean, not to say that they weren't psychological attacks or whatever, but they seemed like they were kind of like trying to do that weird coordinated CIA, like wishing somebody to die.
Yeah,
which, that's the thing. I mean, okay, it was weird and crazy, but Hoover was weird and crazy. One thing J. Edgar Hoover wasn't, though, was careless.
No, he was pretty careful.
Yeah, so that's the other reason I don't think he would have gotten such a, like, dumb fuck to be an assassin.
But listen, you would consider me a pretty methodical person, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, like a serial killer.
Serial killer, I like that. I like that. It's a little bit of an exaggeration, but I see your point.
Yeah.
And I like it. I take it as a compliment.
He was the head of the FBI at that point, but I don't know, like, if he would have been in charge of that.
He took a personal interest in undermining civil rights people.
Okay.
He was directly responsible for them setting up Marcus Garvey and deporting him.
Yeah.
And he was the one that set up the operations to, like, you know, you should kill yourself to Martin Luther King. He had a personal interest in that.
I mean, the other reason why I could see them getting a complete and total idiot is that nobody would believe that the FBI would hire a complete and total idiot.
And that is a good point there. That is a good point. I mean, he was a master escape artist, apparently. He escaped from like 5 different prisons. He was the only man to ever escape from Stony Mountain. And what's really funny, though, is he got arrested after he escaped from Stony Mountain, and he was using like some alias like Pedro Alazar or something.
Mr. Hutz, why are you burning all your personal papers?
As of this moment, Lionel Hutz no longer exists. Say hello to Miguel Sanchez.
Is that one of those fenceless prisons, just real quick, or what kind of prison is that?
It had fences and stuff, but it has a giant mountain behind it. Like this giant stone face that was one of the, it was like a natural wall. And that was what made it so hard to get around. And he actually managed to scale that freaking wall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And crazy. Because, they didn't need as many guards on the wall as most prisons. That was the whole reason that Stony Mountain was so hard to escape. And, I mean, it's still around today.
Interesting.
Yeah, but when he escaped, he used, like, some Spanish alias, like Pedro Alizar.
Miguel Sanchez.
Something. And everybody was like, you don't look like a Pedro. Like, he got arrested, and he's, like, this, like, rural southern, like, had a thick accent, apparently.
Yeah.
And they were like, you don't look like a Pedro. And he was like, of course I'm Pedro. Ask my brother Billy Ray. It's like.
James then the cops were like, yeah,
James Earl Ray has a brother named Billy Ray.
See, if he would have played it cool, he could have just, like, for listeners who don't know, my first language is Spanish. I'm bilingual. But if he looked at me, I look white, like white, basically. There's people who like that who exist. We could just pretend to be that. But he sounds crazy. I mean, to be like, to say the entire name that is of his brother, he didn't even change the last name.
Or it was Jerry Ray. Sorry, it was Jerry Ray. But he's like, ask my brother Jerry Ray. What a dumbass.
So you're Pedro Alizar, but your brother is Jerry Ray.
Yeah, Jerry Ray, but he's like Pedro Alizar or some shit.
Is this like an Emilio Estevez, Charlie Sheen situation going on?
Yeah, it's like one of those things.
What's up with that again? The Charlie Sheen?
Okay, so Martin Sheen's real name is Martin Estevez something. I can't remember. But as you know, as a Hispanic person, lots and lots of Hispanic people back then were super duper Catholic. And they also, some of them listened to crazy Catholic priest on the radio.
Naturally.
And he decided to change his name to Martin Sheen to Americanize his name. And Sheen came from some crazy priest that was on the radio.
Oh, God.
And also Americanizing your name is
a Hollywood tradition.
Yeah, because it's seen as it'll help your career.
Yeah. Ted Williams, that man was like, I want to say his parents were from Mexico.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, Ted Williams, yeah.
Yeah.
Rita Hayworth was Mexican.
Geraldo Rivera, no, just kidding. But he actually went by Jimmy Rivers in like the 70s.
Oh, I know. He also was actually a journalist in the 70s too.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing about that story.
Crazy thing. Yeah. Yeah, he actually did real news in the 70s.
He was an investigative reporter.
Investigating with different empty vaults.
He was a war correspondent during Vietnam.
Yeah. Oh,
God. He was one of those guys that there was gunfire over him and stuff. And he's like, yeah, we're hitting it right now. Pop, 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 pop.
I wish I wasn't in the middle of the battlefield, but
I am. I might die.
So here's the news.
Yeah. And I mean, that was cool, but. Yeah, it was after Al Capone's vault.
It seems, at least up to now, that we've struck out with the vault. I'm disappointed about that, as I'm sure you are.
I think he just went completely bat-felt.
Or he just stopped caring.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's the whole thing with him, like, doing that fake report about homeless people that were, like, taking the system for a ride, apparently.
Yeah.
And all that crap. And it's like, look.
The dude works for Fox News. Yeah. He's not a journalist anymore.
He was like, if Michael Jackson's guilty, I'll shave off my mustache. What kind of journalism is that?
But yeah, Geraldo Rivera, just for maybe international listeners, is a journalist turned sensationalist who did things like, the fake homeless report. Like, I think he found somebody who was doing that, but he like combed and searched for them. But the report made it look like it was everybody.
Oh, yeah. He also did this thing where he had like a 48-hour television special where they were opening up Al Capone's vault.
Yeah, I remember this.
There was like a stain on the floor.
Yeah, that's what they found.
There's a great scene in UHF about that.
Yeah.
Have you seen that one?
Oh, God, UHF. Yeah, not in a long time.
Yeah, I haven't seen that in forever.
Yeah, there's a scene where they're like looking inside Al Capone's glove box.
The world watched in amazement as he unlocked the mysteries of Al Capone's glove compartment.
Uh-huh. Road maps.
Yeah, there was like a stain on the floor, and I'm sure it was like a human stain, but that was it. And yeah, like that was it. And it was just a 48-hour special for them to find nothing.
There was nothing in Al Capone's vault, but it wasn't Geraldo's fault.
I remember.
All right. So, yeah, that's pretty much James Earl Ray. Oh, it's also funny. He died of hepatitis C, which does not sound pleasant.
No. And yeah. Good.
And good, right?
Yeah.
Couldn't think of a better person. So that's also pretty wacky because he died of hepatitis C. And I just imagine him all curled up like all and been dead.
So you just described the process of dying, but with sounds.
Well, yeah, and also dying of hepatitis C.
Is that what happens when you have hepatitis C? You go, and then die.
Well, I'm sure you do a lot of going,
Yeah, but you're like proportions.
Yeah, I'm sure you're making a lot of noises.
Yeah, I'm sure. I was definitely paraphrasing it, but.
I just thought it funny. It reminded me of those cockroaches from that commercial.
That commercial's so great. The Thai commercial with the termites.
Yeah.
Where they're all like, this poison's shit. Like, they're all foaming out of their mouth, dying. That commercial's amazing. Oh, and if any of my listeners are curious, just look up Thai bug spray commercial and you'll find it.
Yeah, like, it'll pop up pretty quick.
It's pretty good. I'm sure that stuff's poisonous is all goddamn for humans too. Because I mean, I don't think there's a poison that's good for anybody.
No.
What about chemo drugs?
Okay, but you know, if you gave that to somebody who didn't need them,
yeah, it's not gonna be good for them.
Not gonna be good for them.
Can't hurt. No, just kidding. I'm not
gonna it can.
That's like giving insulin to somebody who doesn't need it,
or some kind of porridge, you know.
Yeah, or some kind of porridge, but everybody, and that's everybody, needs Patriot porridge. Not for children under the age of 18.
Though not for children at all.
Yeah, not for children at all. They can't make choices for themselves.
And this is a choice.
This is a libertarian product. It's all about choice. This is the most libertarian product.
Oh, God. I hope nobody ever tries to make it.
If they do, it's their fault, and I'm going to sue the shit out of them because they're ripping me off.
Yeah, we had this discussion last time.
I know, but we're going to have this discussion all the time. That's what this podcast is going to become. Every single great podcaster ever has used it to sell poison to people.
I don't think you can back that up by statistics or logic.
Okay, what about those mattresses that wound up poisoning a bunch of people?
Which ones?
I can't remember the exact brand of that mattress, but it had like these fibers that were like messing up people's lungs like asbestos.
Oh, God.
And it's like, I know podcasters that were like all well-intentioned were selling those. And I mean, we have a Casper mattress, but I know it wasn't Casper, thank God.
Yeah, and also...
This is definitely not a well-intentioned product. You can say or try to spin it however you want.
It's not a well-intentioned product. It's about freedom. And sometimes freedom isn't about the best intentions. Like, I mean, look at when we gave those brave Mujahideen fighters Rambo and a bunch of Stinger missile launchers, and then they made Afghanistan free.
Well, that's not what happened, but... I mean, that did happen, but that's not what really happened.
They freed it up for the Taliban to be in control.
That was a movie.
Well, I mean, Rambo wasn't there, but the rest of it happened.
Well, it's like that time, it's like any time you get like a big a conflict, like, I mean, like the time the world was in it. Remember when Will Smith was doing his thing?
Yeah, I remember. We sent Randy Quaid. There was a whole episode about this, Sophia. We sent Randy Quaid into the tractor beam and he saved us all.
Hello, boys! I'm back!
Okay, back to the...
Getting back to the assassins, because, I mean, we could have a lot of fun here tonight. But so, next up, we're going to talk about Arthur Bremer. Since we were talking about pieces of shit who are white supremacist, we might as well. And okay, so Bremer, it's kind of hard to like explain Bremer's political ideology because.
So who did Bremer kill?
Bremer didn't kill anybody. He shot George Wallace like 3 times and paralyzed him. And in court, he yelled, "Who gives a damn if I shot some segregationist dinosaur?"
Which, I mean, that's a perfectly adequate defense in my book.
Honestly, as a lawyer, I would have been like, all right, well, my work's done. I would have sat down and been like, Your Honor, we rest our case.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what a good lawyer would do.
I would, because it's like, he had a good point. Who cares if I shoot this segregationist dinosaur?
It's like, that's a good point in my book. I'm just saying. If I was on that jury, if I was on that jury, I'd be compelled.
Yeah, I would have stood up and started clapping if I was in that courtroom. It would have been like, I would have done the slow clap. I would have just stood up and been like. Started looking at everybody to see if anybody else was doing the slow clap with me, and when I realized nobody else was clapping, I'd just sit down. But yeah, I would try starting the clap like in the movies.
Okay. I don't know anything else about him, so
okay. Well, he was fucking crazy, so let's talk a little bit more about Bremer. So early on, he was considered like just this weird guy, and like he talked to himself, and like he worked in a restaurant as a busser. He scared the ever living shit out of customers because he'd sit there talking to himself all the time. And if you're scaring customers as a busser, that's kind of normal. But if you're really scaring customers to the point that they're complaining, then yeah, that's a real problem.
Yeah, yeah, bussers aren't supposed to be noticed.
Yeah. Yeah, when they mumble to themselves, they're not supposed to keep doing it like they're having a conversation.
I was
the
worst busser ever. I went from table to table running and sprinting and stopping. Everything in my tray would go and kind of like slosh. And then I'd throw things in there. Half the time I'd break the plates. I was not good at doing that job.
No, it sounds like you weren't.
Yeah, that sounds like you're trying to do it way too fast.
Well, if I did it slower, they would yell at me.
Welcome to
the joys of working in a restaurant.
Yeah. There are none.
They want to yell at you.
There are none.
They want to yell at you. It doesn't matter. They want to yell at you. Their life's not going the way they planned it.
I know. I've told you the saga of the hamburger buns.
They usually don't own a restaurant.
No, they usually work at the restaurant.
They usually work there,
They
too.
Work for the owner
but
of the restaurant.
They have a little bit of power, so they're going to ride that shit stick.
By God, they're going to use that power.
Jackie doesn't trust you with that kind of money, so she wants to put someone in charge of it to control how much you spend.
Oh, it's not Martin, is it?
No. No, it's not, actually.
Right. Well, who is it? Is this some kind of Brewster's Millions scenario?
It's me. I'm in charge of your money.
Brilliant. You're the boss of me. This is your pathetic dream come true, isn't it?
So another thing about Bremer that I always found fascinating is at another point, he became a janitor at a school and he started dating like a 15-year-old student at the school. And somehow that didn't get him arrested or like burned at the stake or, you know, anything like that.
When was this? 1540?
1970.
And I assume this was somewhere in the South?
Midwest.
Midwest? Okay, same thing.
Midwest. And so what happened was he like went on a date with her. Also, all the other janitors thought he was weird, which I'm going to
say. Okay,
when
all the other janitors think you're a weirdo.
Is this the second person that we've talked about on the podcast who, that was a different, that was a different podcast.
Yeah. So this freaking guy, he went on a date with a girl at one point and like, she only went on like one date, like a couple dates with him, but he was like, determined to impress her friends, even though like there are a bunch of like 15-year-olds and there's this like weird like 22-year-old, 23-year-old guy there.
Like someone who should not be hanging around with them.
Scott Pilgrim was dating a high schooler.
Yeah.
But probably has... Well, okay, we know he has some sort of mental problem that nobody is... doing anything to help him.
Yeah, according to that girl, he was like doing dance moves that he had obviously seen on TV.
So far, this just sounds like Scott Pilgrim, the second part.
Yeah, yeah, it's like Scott Pilgrim if he tried to kill Nixon.
So it's like Scott Pilgrim meets Taxi Driver.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a weird cycle. This movie helped inspire, this dude helped inspire Taxi Driver, and Taxi Driver helped inspire John Hinckley.
Yeah,
which we're not going to talk much about Hinckley because everybody knows about Hinckley. I will say, though, that I love what his guitar says on it. I saw a picture of him. He's trying to start a folk band or a punk band or something now. But his guitar says, "This machine attempts to kill fascist."
But, you know,
that's a freaking...
That's funny.
That's hilarious.
Wait, I thought it said something. It said, I think it used a different word.
No, it was, "This machine attempts to kill fascist." Oh, almost. "This machine almost kills fascist." That's what it says on it. Almost kills fascist, which that's funny.
In regards to Reagan, I don't think I'm going to give him the qualifier of almost. Like, he winged him.
Yeah, he winged him a bunch of times. Came way closer to killing Brady.
Exactly.
He had a mercury bullet, though.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. He came way closer to killing Brady. Because none of those bullets hit any bone.
So the mercury didn't...
Yeah, they just, like, and they just wung him. They didn't even go in him that deep.
Yeah, like... Mostly flesh wounds.
But he hit Brady right in the head, and that's why Brady was all...
Never recovered.
Yeah, that's why we have the Brady Bill now.
Exactly.
The Brady Bunch were already a thing.
Yeah, they were already a thing, and they have nothing to do with this. Although, it would have been cool if, like, that had been, like, an episode of the Brady Bunch. Like, Greg was, like, planning on killing, like Reagan or somebody. Like, well, okay, the Brady Bunch is the early 70s, so it'd be, like, Nixon.
Yeah.
It'd be, like, planning on killing Nixon. That'd be dope.
Which is who Bremer...
Yeah, who Bremer originally planned on killing. Because, okay, it has to do with that girl.
Yes.
So after he really failed on that date, she didn't want to talk to him anymore, and he kept trying to go by, and, like, he shaved all of his hair off to show her how, like, sad he was. And she was like, okay, he's crazy.
Yeah, something and weirdo does.
Her parents were like, stay away from our daughter or we'll call the police. So he naturally went and bought a gun, which...
He can only have good intentions.
He then got arrested because he was, like, sleeping in his car, and he had, like, hundreds of rounds of ammunition.
And a gun.
And they were like, that's weird.
So, and a shaved head.
He got, like, evaluated and stuff. And he was eventually let go. And he completely lost track of the fact that he was probably going to go kill his ex-girlfriend and her parents.
His ex-girlfriend. This is a girl that he's stalking at this point.
He dated one time or something. He went on a date with her, and now he's like stalking her and trying to kill her. And
yeah,
he lost track of that though and decided that Nixon would be a lot cooler to kill.
Well, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong, but
like I hate to keep saying this about him, but he's not wrong.
Yeah, so he was gonna kill Nixon, and he eventually realized that since Kennedy had died, it'd be pretty hard to kill Nixon, since Nixon was currently the president.
Yeah.
So he decided it'd be a lot easier to shoot George Wallace, especially since George Wallace was, like, running for president.
Yeah, I can see the logic.
Yeah. So he eventually, like, went to go shake hands with Wallace and, like, broke through the crowd and just, like, shot him in the stomach, like, three times, which he apparently was going to say, "A penny for your thoughts."
That would have been pretty funny.
He never got the chance. But
I kind of sad for him on that. Yeah.
He shot Wallace, and, you know, he said that stuff in court about shooting a segregationist dinosaur, and he paralyzed Wallace. Wallace actually became like an anti-segregationist afterward. And I'm like, so maybe this guy did some good by paralyzing George Wallace.
Maybe.
He was let out of jail in 2007. And he's now, like, his probation will be on until 2025. He is not allowed to ever go near a politician again. And he has to get mental health checks, like, all the time.
Which these stipulations make sense.
Make a lot of sense because the guy was crazy.
Yes. He was obviously mentally deranged.
Yeah, he totally was. I mean, the thing is, he also made two diaries that, like, recorded his progress. And one of which he, like, wrapped in tinfoil and put in, like, a briefcase and buried in, like, a landfill. And it eventually got found. And I'm sure the guy that found it was like, yeah, I thought this could be full of syringes, but I'm so glad it wasn't.
Yeah, it's just a crazy man journal.
Yeah, which I'm sure he didn't know what the hell he had at first.
Now, did he give a reason for shooting George Wallace other than, like, because?
No, it was just, like, I shot him. Like,
I just shot him because I had the gun.
Crazy segregationist, how did you not listen? No, just kidding.
He wanted to be famous. That was the other thing. He wanted to be famous.
Okay, okay, they're like, for me, I want to know motives. I'm one of those people.
Yeah, his motive was just, he was unbalanced.
He was just crazy. And he wanted to be famous. Okay.
Yeah. Because he was going to, like you said, kill his girlfriend's parents that day.
Yeah, and her. And then he kind of just like lost track of it.
Yeah, he lost track of it, decided Nixon would be cooler to kill.
I mean, it's like the FBI's official report on the Vegas shooter, that guy that shot from the hotel.
Yeah.
Where they were just like, he's batshit crazy. That was as much of a motive as we had.
And, I mean, sometimes that's it. Like, any assassin, generally they're going to be batshit crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, I am one of those people where I want to know why. Like, what is making someone tick like this?
Oh, yeah.
That's why, you know, I have my interest in true crime.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of batshit crazy, we're going to move on to the most batshit crazy of any of our attempted assassins or... Yeah, actually, I don't... Oh, okay, there's one successful assassin in here.
Yeah.
Besides James Earl Ray. So our other successful assassin will come later, and he's probably the other most batshit crazy. But this guy takes the crazy cake. Richard Lawrence.
Ah, yes.
King Richard.
Yep, you've told me about him.
Yeah, so King Richard, 1800 to 1861, he was an English immigrant.
Now, King, where's an immigrant to?
The United States.
Yes, he immigrated from England to the U.S.
Yes.
Exposition.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, Sophia, what was one of the most common ingredients in paint in this time period?
Why, lead.
Yes, lead, of course, lead. And here is our poster child for lead. I mean, I wish this man were still alive. We would give him a sponsorship deal for Patriot Porridge. He came from England to America and was a house painter. And lead made him understand that he was the king of England.
The rightful king.
The rightful king. King Richard, even though King Richard had been dead for a while. But
like a couple hundred years at this point?
Like 100 years, 200 years, something yeah. like that. Yeah. So he tried to kill Andrew Jackson, which, okay, that's not
the worst person you can attempt to kill.
Yeah. That also seems like one of the few presidents. I mean, he was an awful person, but like just purely speaking objectively, he seems like one of the few presidents who, if you tried to kill him, you'd be at the risk of him personally killing you back.
You absolutely would run that risk.
Yeah, you are not wrong. He was a vengeful man.
He was an angry man.
I don't even remember how many dozen duels.
A lot. He was an angry, vengeful man, and he had no problem killing another person.
Or, like, a bunch of other people with his laws.
Yeah. Like, he had no qualms with that.
Yeah, Trail of Tears was him, right? Or was that someone else?
That was Andrew Jackson.
Yeah, that was Jackson.
Okay, so his family emigrated to the United States when he was about 12, and they lived in Virginia near Washington. And according to everybody, he was fairly normal for a long time.
He just got that patriot spirit.
He just eventually got inspired by the spirit of patriotism.
I'm assuming this is probably a couple of years after he started his house painting job.
It was absolutely a couple of years after he started his house painting job. So he was a relatively reserved, moral, you know, young man who found work as a house painter. He was a relatively moral, fine, like, okay, young man, according to all contemporary reports. And at a young age, he found a job as a house painter. And a lot of historians speculate that this may have led to... okay, so by the 1830s, his behavior had, like, noticeably changed. He was mad as a hatter.
Yeah, lead seeping in through the skin will do that.
Well, if you don't mix it with the mercury. They balance each other out.
No, they don't.
No, it's like speedballing.
If you say so.
What, it'll kill you twice as fast? I mean, no, Patriot Porridge, I eat it every day.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, speedballing doesn't... Okay, it, never mind. That kills you right away.
It's a much higher risk profile.
Yeah, if you hook up, it kills you immediately.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on. he eventually decided that he was going to go back to England, he told his family. And then he came like back home and started telling them it was too cold. He's like, okay, that's weird. And then he
He went back to England?
No, he just like came back to his house.
He said he's going to England.
He told his family in America.
Yeah, he's like, it's too cold. I'm like,
so he went that day?
Like a day. He like left for like a day.
Oh no, but I mean, was it too cold that day or was it too cold in England? Did it make
it too cold in England? They were like, okay, that's weird.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was a month that he was gone.
Okay, so he actually made it to England, bro. No.
You back then?
Oh yeah, you'd have to have sailed and that would have taken like a month at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think you could maybe make a round trip in 6 weeks, but probably not a month.
He's probably sleeping in a park or something.
Yeah.
And he's like,
train station. Cold. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no.
So he eventually he was like, I'm going to England. I'm gonna study landscape painting.
More paint.
Yes, more paint.
That's all the paint guy needs.
Oh my god, dude! Oh, that's just disgusting.
It's not bad.
You can't drink paint.
I know. I hear you.
You say that, but I don't think that you're gonna stop.
I get it though, man. That's right.
I feel like you're saying you get it, but you don't get it.
It's cool.
It's not cool.
It is what it is.
My god, this is so frustrating.
So he went to Philadelphia. And he came back from Philadelphia and began telling them that unnamed persons were responsible for him not being able to go back to England.
Well, you know those unnamed persons.
Big tail gribble energy.
Oh, yeah. And that the U.S. government also was responsible for him not going back to England.
Yeah. You know the U.S. government, they don't want people just going to England.
Yeah. Continue.
He wanted to buy his own boat and hire a captain who was loyal to him to sail back to England.
Angel Marie,
gentlemen, may I see you in my cabin immediately?
Who hired this crew? This is undoubtedly the seediest bunch of cutthroats, villains, and scoundrels I have ever seen. So who hired them?
Your finger hired the crew?
No, that's silly. The man who lives in my finger hired the crew.
So he needed money.
Wait, I thought it was too cold.
No, it's summer now. It's summer now, so it's warm. It's warm enough to take over England in the summer.
Yeah, so he just quit his job at some point, house painting. He just like abruptly quit.
Because that's how you get money for a boat.
Yeah, his family was like, what are you gonna do for money? And he was like, there's no problem with money. The U.S. government owes me a ton of money.
And I'm sure his family was like, when did this happen?
Okay, so did he think his name was King Richard and he was just the newest King Richard? Or did he think he was like the old King Richard?
Well, Jacob, you were way more correct about how long Richard III had been dead. He had been dead for about 400 years almost by this point. But yeah, he believed he was Richard III.
Yes.
So that'd be like me thinking that I were like a Massachusetts colonist.
Yes.
Yes. And he believed he wasn't getting the money because of Andrew Jackson's opposition to the Federal Reserve.
I still don't get the part where Richard III is owed money by the United States government. If anything, it's the other way around, but even that's really, like, fallacious.
Yeah, and he would tell everybody that Martin Van Buren was going to, like, give him his money. And interestingly enough, he actually painted Van Buren's house, like, shortly before he quit. So there are... Van Buren didn't like Jackson. That's well known.
Yes.
There's theories that Van Buren told him to waste Jackson and he would give him money. Like, because the bank would have to give him money because he was the king of England.
So I'm just imagining, too, that like he's painting Van Buren's house and Van Buren's like just noticing little things about him, like that, like his shoelaces untied. He's like, oh, you know who does that? These little gnomes that are hired by Andrew Jackson. It's like, grr, that Andrew Jackson.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh my God, you what is that? Is that on your back? And then he pours something on his back. Just gaslights this guy into hating Andrew Jackson more and more, filling him with more and more lead and stories.
Yeah, I was going to say, it might take it a while to paint his house, so.
Probably say that's probably gonna be like a week of work at least.
Oh yeah,
I think to paint a whole house.
Oh, he was probably, and I think Ben Van Buren was so wealthy.
So basically, what you're saying is that there is a possibility Van Buren saw this clearly again. Deranged mentally individual. Ill. Clearly mentally ill individual working on his property was like, I'm gonna take advantage of that.
Yes. So according to everybody, he started like his outward appearance even changed with his personality at this point. He started acting and talking more like he was royalty.
Try it again.
Yes.
Good. Now, flourish the pinky.
Yes.
And he started wearing, using like a thin twirly mustache. Like he started styling his mustache like that. He started wearing a purple top hat and a cape.
Yeah, and I said it when you first told me about this, man. I'll say it again. What the fuck is he, Snidely Whiplash?
Yeah, he looked like Snidely Whiplash at this point. And neighborhood kids would like tease him and they'd call him King Richard. And he would like get all excited, not realizing they were making fun of him.
Oh, the story is just getting even sadder. And like,
it doesn't get happier, it just gets weirder. No,
it's a story from the 1700s.
1800s.
Oh, he's just 18, yeah, 1820s or something, right?
Yeah.
He became increasingly paranoid and hostile toward others. He once attempted to kill a maid who he believed was laughing at him when she, like, wasn't around.
Oh.
Wait, so he's the house painter and he has a maid?
I think his family did.
Oh, okay.
He also began, like, verbally and physically abusing most of his family. He... one time tried to hit his sister with a paperweight because he was convinced that she had like talked about him when he wasn't around.
So this guy's just starting to just be the Tuco Salamanca from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul.
The task force is designated Operation Kingbreaker.
Kingbreaker.
So. That makes me the king. Woohoo!
Yeah, like imagine if Tuco had like way more like damage.
Brain damage.
Yeah.
He is spiraling very badly, and apparently nobody is helping him.
He also, according to like people that testified at the trial, they said that he would just like babble incoherently to himself constantly and have these fits where he'd start like yelling and groaning and like hitting stuff.
Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you!
Yeah, these are all, like, really normal signs.
God, was he licking the brush clean?
Probably.
At this point, like, so sometime in January of 1835, he started, like, spying on Andrew Jackson. Started, like, observing his movements and, like, following him and...
this homeless Snidely Whiplash.
Yeah.
It was easier to spy back then, I guess.
Must have been.
Yeah.
I'm hiding behind a bush. You'll never see me. Trot, where is it?
So he was also probably sweating like super profusely while he loaded the guns. Because he eventually went to kill him. And he had two pistols on him. He walked up to him and first gun just malfunctioned and didn't fire. So grab the second gun and the same exact thing happened. And it was believed that it was because of humidity inside the gun. So it was either like it was just a humid ass day while he was loading it, or he was like sweating profusely while he was loading it.
Oh, yeah. And this is a musket gun, right?
Yeah, these were musket pistols.
So it could have been both.
Yeah, it could have been both.
Yeah.
And so for some of the listeners, maybe who aren't acquainted, what's the difference between that and like...
like a semi-automatic or a wheel gun or revolver?
Oh, yeah, right. Either, yeah.
So muskets are those old-timey single-shot guns that you load the bullet in through the front.
You have to pack the powder in first.
It takes a good minute to reload, right?
Yeah, they take about a minute to reload if you're trained.
No, if you were trained.
If you're trained, they take about 30 seconds.
I think like the fastest on record was like 17 seconds, something like that.
But like, on average, it'd be like a 30-second reload for a soldier.
Like if you were a trained soldier, about 30 seconds. If you were just like a hunter or civilian, like you don't
about
really
a minute,
use it.
Minute
yeah.
And a half.
Yeah, if you're someone who's not really trained to use it, yeah, probably about a minute, minute and a half.
And these things didn't have rifling. The bullets were round balls.
They were like a 50 caliber, I think, just round ball.
Depending on the gun. There were like there were like 40 calibers and stuff like that. There were Derringer pistols at the time.
Yeah.
Which is a giant hunk of lead.
But yeah, you're essentially just firing a ball of lead.
Yeah, it was like a small cannon, essentially. Yeah. And but yeah, both these guns malfunctioned, which at that point, Jackson,
being Andrew Jackson, like,
yelled,
"The game is up, Whiplash! Drop that baton!"
And Davy Crockett saw all this, and Davy Crockett like jumped on him and wrestled him to the ground, and Jackson began pummeling him with his cane.
Again, being Andrew Jackson.
Mm-hmm. So he went to trial, King Richard, and he was declared not guilty by reason of insanity after the jury deliberated for 5 minutes. And one of my favorite things is he screamed, "It is for me, gentlemen, to pass judgment on you, not for you to pass judgment on me."
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Yeah, so I can see why deliberation only took 5 minutes. Because clearly this was, again, homeless Snidely Whiplash sitting in the courtroom yelling about judging you.
With lead poisoning.
Yeah. Like, yeah, this man was clearly insane.
Now, speaking of another crazy man named Richard. Richard Paul Pavlik, the first Kennedy assassin.
Ah.
So, before Lee Harvey Oswald, which we'll do a whole episode about how Lee Harvey Oswald was the one that blasted Kennedy to death. And yeah, but this guy decided he was going to kill Kennedy.
And he had a great plan, didn't he?
Oh, he absolutely did. His plan was to use dynamite.
Yeah.
I mean, there has been a successful explosion with, assassination with dynamite.
Oh my God. Absolutely. In Spain, that guy they launched into into the air.
He was Spain's first astronaut. Yeah,
that guy, that was dope. Also, there was that guy, that czar, that got killed with the round bomb with the fuse coming out of the top, the comical bomb like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice, baby. Whiplash.
Yeah, essentially, it was just some dude that rode up on horseback and threw it in his carriage.
Any background information on Richard we should know?
Okay, he hated Catholics. He absolutely despised Catholics.
Ah.
And he was going to be damned if that goddamn Irish son of a bitch, as he referred to him, was going to be president.
Okay.
That's a fascinating level of hate for that in that century.
Oh, yeah. And he worked as a postal worker in Boston before retiring and relocating in the 50s. He had no family. He was known as being like this weird, angry loner who had all these political rants at like city council meetings and stuff.
Ham and mayonnaise. Ham and mayonnaise. Ham and mayonnaise.
He complained about the American flag not being displayed appropriately. Constantly criticized Catholics, and again would tell people that he wouldn't let that Irish Catholic son of a bitch Kennedy be president over his dead body.
So his plan was to dynamite Kennedy.
Yes, his plan was to use dynamite to fix it. And after Kennedy defeated Richard Nixon in the 1960 election, the 73-year-old decided to kill him. He turned his...
Oh, wait, he was 73.
Yes, he was 73.
I thought he just meant he retired real early.
No, he was 73.
Yeah.
And this is 73 in, like, 1960.
So he was born in the 1800s.
Also, I was just going to say, too, that 73 in 1960s years is basically 180.
Yeah. Yeah, he probably looked like the fucking Crypt Keeper.
Well, here's a picture of him.
No, that's not.
Honestly, that's better than I thought.
That's a picture of him. He looks like somebody left Fred Willard out in the sun too long.
Yeah, that's what he looks way. Like.
And
Fred Willard had a weird love child that got left in the sun.
That got left in the sun. This guy looks weird.
Yeah, no, I like that description.
Yeah. After Kennedy beat Richard Nixon in the 60 presidential election, 73-year-old Pavlik decided it was time to kill Kennedy. He turned his property over to a local youth camp, loaded up like what little he had into his Buick, and which was a 1950 Buick, and it's like, wow, that car would be worth probably more than he owned now.
Yeah.
And that was it. He just vanished. And postmasters started getting these really weird postcards like that were like cryptic as shit. and stating that Washington, D.C. would soon hear from him in a big way.
Stay tuned. No.
Noticing that the postmark dates were all around like Kennedy's movements, the postmaster was like, oh, God, called the Secret Service to let them know like some crazy ass is trying to kill Kennedy.
Yeah, this guy's been following the president.
Yeah. He also sent photographs of Kennedy to the postmaster to like let him know I've been following Kennedy. And, like,
this is my secret plan.
Yeah. Yeah. So
she's a secret.
So at 10 a.m. on Sunday, December 11th, 1960, Kennedy was leaving Mass and the dude started trailing on him. And the plan was he had loaded his car up with dynamite and he was going to go just blow his car up like into him.
And he's ready to accept all that collateral damage.
Oh, well, here's where it gets kind of funny. Pavlik changed his mind after seeing Kennedy with his wife and two children. Pavlik said he didn't want to harm her or the children, just Kennedy.
So he changed his plan, right?
No, he started taking dynamite out of his car because he was planning on using less dynamite.
Because that's how dynamite works.
Yeah, he had a clear, like, he obviously, like, just didn't understand, like, explosions at all or dynamite or any of these things. Like, I don't know what he was thinking would happen.
Well, if he has 30 cases of dynamite and he takes out five, obviously the wife and children are going to be okay.
Oh, yeah. And some police, like, just rode up on him unloading all this dynamite. And they were like, the fuck are you doing? He's like, I'm going to kill Kennedy. They were like, oh. And they arrested him immediately.
That's what they should have done.
They're infringing on his right to be a nutcase.
Yeah, kind of. They were kind of infringing on his right to be a complete loon. Yeah, okay. Actually, here is like one of the things he said to the police. Kennedy money bought the White House and the presidency. I had the crazy idea I wanted to stop Kennedy from being president. That's what he told them. They were like, yeah, okay, with dynamite.
That is a crazy idea.
So the charges against Pavlik were dropped 10 days after Kennedy's assassination, which I don't understand why.
Well, you can't be guilty for wanting to kill a president. The president dead by other means.
Yeah, somebody else killed him. You're not guilty.
It's like when like a store closes down, everybody who got in trouble for stealing from that store gets let out of prison.
Yeah, he was ordered to remain in a psychiatric hospital, and he eventually got out in 1966. He apparently spent the rest of his life sending threatening letters to that postmaster.
He just couldn't be bothered with him?
Well, that was the thing, was he was just mad at the postmaster for squealing on him.
Yeah. So he's going to threaten him for the rest of his life. Yeah. Which, since he was already in his 70s, I don't imagine.
Like 80 at this point.
Yeah, I don't imagine it was too much longer.
Yeah, he died at the age of 88 in 1975.
Okay, I thought you were going to be like, actually, he's still alive. He's 135.
Yeah, he's planning on killing Joe Biden now with dynamite.
He's been yelling about how he's a Catholic.
Yeah, but that's Richard Paul Pavlik. Now, moving on, we're going to talk about Giuseppe Zangara.
Oh.
Yeah, our old buddy Joe. So, 1900 to 1933, this Italian immigrant who naturalized in the United States and attempted to kill Franklin D. Roosevelt, who at the time was just a president-elect.
Yes.
So it was like after November, but before January.
Before he was sworn in, yeah.
Yeah, it was they did the inauguration later.
Yeah, they've changed the date a few times.
I thought they only changed the date like in the 1800s. That's beside the point.
No, Roosevelt's inauguration was going to be on March 1st.
Oh, okay, so it was probably in the 50s when they were changing all that stuff.
And yeah, this was February 15th, 1933. A little bit before his term started. Okay, so Giuseppe was... okay, so he was not very well educated. He worked as a bricklayer and... he started having severe pain to his abdomen.
Oh.
And doctors told him there's no cure. He did an appendectomy because he thought it might help.
It didn't, I assume.
It did not. It actually made things worse.
Oh, poor Giuseppe.
Yeah. And he was like in just absolute agony because of this. Like he had real problems. He had what was referred to as chronic flatulence.
So he's just letting them rip constantly. Yeah,
he's
just
farting and he's constantly in pain from the gas pressure in his body.
God, that sounds horrible.
So on February 15th, 1933, Roosevelt was giving a speech and he had these delusions that like Roosevelt was responsible for it because Roosevelt had put a curse on him.
Because it's the 1930s and curses are very real still.
And he was not a very bright dude.
Honestly, though, with how much stuff you told us about these people, I can imagine any one of them believing that it's a curse.
I would believe that was that. So if I had whatever he had wrong with him, that I with me, I would probably start believing it was a curse after a while.
And the president put it on you.
Well, that's maybe. The step. That's the step I'm having trouble with. Yeah. It's like, okay, I'm cursed.
Well,
okay,
he was the governor of New York before that.
Yeah, but does the governor of New York dole out flatulence?
No, but I also didn't appreciate seeing the governor of New York's pierced nipples a few years ago.
Nobody appreciated that.
Yeah, nobody appreciated that. Thank God he got taken out of office.
Ew.
Yeah, the sexual harassment was bad, but he was sexually harassing all of us by making us look at his nipple piercings under his shirt.
That is true.
It was horrible. You could see him right through the things. He was like 60, and he's all like, I'm some rich guy with nipple piercings. It was, ugh.
Come on.
And his creepy brother got fired from CNN for trying to help him cover up his like rape stuff.
God.
Ugh. Yeah. But moving on. Okay, so you know, people have always had problems with the governor of New York.
Yes.
That's the takeaway.
Yeah, that's the takeaway. So, yes, the governor of New York, now president, was putting this curse on him. So when Roosevelt showed up in Chicago, like he sold some stuff. And he bought an $8 32 caliber pistol, which it's like, you know, like $170 now.
What's his name again?
Giuseppe Zingara.
Yes. Okay. Sorry.
So he went to the beach where Roosevelt, or not to the beach. Where was it? It wasn't Chicago he went to. It was in Miami that the speech was happening, but the mayor of Chicago was there.
Yeah.
And, so he was on the beach. And there was a huge crowd of spectators. This dude was exactly 5 feet tall.
So not exactly tall.
Not exactly tall. So he couldn't get a clean shot on Kennedy or on Roosevelt. So he took a metal folding chair and climbed up on top of it.
So there's a 5 foot tall Italian man
with a pistol
who is constantly farting.
Yeah.
Now standing on a chair.
Well, yeah, by the time he was up there, people were already trying to like pull him off. And he popped off a couple shots. He injured 5 people. And he actually managed to kill the mayor of Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah, like apparently Roosevelt held him in his arms while he sat there like dying.
Damn.
And I don't know how, but it was Florida. That's why it was Florida. So they realized that he wasn't crazy. He did this because, I don't know what their reasoning was, but.
I mean, clearly the president cursed him.
Yeah. He was sentenced to 80 years in prison. And he told the judge, 4 times 20 is 80. Don't be stingy. Give me 100 years. The mayor of Chicago died a few days after Roosevelt's inauguration, and Zingara was indicted for first-degree murder because of that, because he had intended to commit murder. That was the whole reason.
Well, he did go there with the intent on killing Roosevelt.
Oh, also, apparently the doctor effed up on the mayor of Chicago, and that's how he died, but that had nothing to do with it. And it's like one of those things where it's like, it does and it doesn't. I really think they railroaded the poor guy, though, because it sounded like he was mentally unwell. And
again, he believed the president of the United States had cursed him with unbearable flatulence. Like, yeah, I I'm going to say this guy is probably mentally unwell. Because, as it turns out, that's a theme a lot of these would-be assassins have.
So, yeah, they eventually stuck him in the electric chair, and they fried him.
Did he fart one last time?
Probably. But, yeah, there's, like, a bunch of, like, conspiracy theories about it. Like, They're usually to do with Roosevelt setting it up.
Is he the one that people say that he's a time traveler with a quarter from a billion years in the future? Or like whatever the... It's one of those dumb chain emails I used to get.
Possible, but I do know that like people claimed he was like an Italian spy that was here to kill Roosevelt, which is like, that's fucking ridiculous. Why would they send a 5-foot spy?
Again, a 5-foot tall spy who is constantly farting.
I mean, I don't really like the M word, so I won't use it, but I did like that. I mean, it reminds me of that American Dad character, the assassin that's a little person that hides inside the airbag.
Oh, yeah, of Stan's
steering wheel and, like, strangles him.
I mean, I will say that the whole thing about spies is just that they can blend into a crowd, which, I mean, like, you can do if you're short, but you can't do if you're short and flatulent and crazy.
Yeah, again, that's the thing. He is constantly farting. He cannot stop it. Mm-hmm. So this would not make a good spy.
Oh no. So I was focusing on the height thing.
Yeah.
All right. So now we're gonna talk about John Schrank, which I love that name.
Schrank.
Yep. Yeah, John Schrank, which John Schrank is best known because he's the one who attempted to kill Teddy Roosevelt, which we actually talked about in the first episode of Nerd Forensics. He's the one that shot him and like wounded him. And
so the other Roosevelt
then came. Yes,
the other Roosevelt.
The uncle, yeah. Right?
I think, yeah, they're somehow related, but I think it was on Eleanor's side that like they're related because I know they were like second cousins or some shit.
But yeah, he's the one who he got shot and then continued his speech.
Yeah. So this guy, John Schrank, what happened was the ghost of William McKinley appeared to him one night and told him that Teddy Roosevelt had murdered him. So he needed him to avenge his death.
Which, that's not what happened at all.
No. Actually,
McKinley was killed by another crazy person.
Yeah, McKinley was killed by a man named Leon Czolgosz. So he shot Roosevelt, wounded him. Roosevelt did his whole bull moose speech, which it was a police service revolver that he shot him with, and it didn't go through a 50-page text. What a crappy gun.
Yeah. Yeah, 50 pages is kind of, that's probably about like a half-inch paperback book,
yeah,
right?
But I mean, that's the thing, it's a paperback. It wasn't even like a hard copy.
Yeah. It wasn't folded up, was it?
Probably not. How was he going to fit that in his breast pocket?
True, huh?
No, it's probably just clothes like normal.
But yeah, so he blasted Roosevelt. He got arrested and wound up, spending his time in an insane asylum because he told them about the McKinley ghost. And they were like,
this is crazy.
Yeah. So that's his whole story. So moving on, we're going to now talk about Leon Czolgosz. And personally, the reason I think he's so fun is because he was a steelworker and an anarchist. And what he would do is he would go to anarchist meetings in New York and he'd be like, "Hello, fellow anarchist and ne'er-do-wells. I am also an anarchist looking for anarchy. And
would you like to do an anarchy with me?"
Yeah.
"How do you do, fellow kids?"
"What?"
Yeah, and they would be like, "This guy's a fucking Pinkerton or something." And they wouldn't trust him at all because they were like, "This guy's a fucking Pinkerton or something." So he got disillusioned and he got really angry with the fact that nobody took him serious as an anarchist.
Yeah.
And I got a hand to him. He was pragmatic. You want to know the quickest way to have people take you seriously as an anarchist?
Kill the president.
Shoot William McKinley.
Now, William McKinley was also a racist asshole.
Oh, McKinley was a bad dude in general.
Yeah, I do at every chance I get like to bring up how much of a piece of shit McKinley was.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was a piece of shit.
Yeah, expansionist, right?
Yes, he was an expansionist. And apparently nobody in Washington liked him. He was just an awful dude.
A lot of presidents have been.
Oh, but McKinley, though, Spanish-American War. That's a good example of McKinley.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I knew he was involved in that kind of weird, like, colonialist. Like,
yeah, I was going to say, he was an expansionist. He was a big dude on the American Empire. I think he might have been the one that sent Abner Doubleday to Japan.
That'd be a whole episode.
Yeah, that'd be a whole episode about, like...
Go, team! Beat those no-good signoids! Show them they stink in a game they've never played before!
I think that was McKinley that did that. But, yeah, so Shogush just decided that I'm gonna blast McKinley, and that's how I'm gonna show everybody I'm an anarchist, which, I mean, granted, he did show everybody...
Yeah, that gets that message across.
And McKinley died of an infection like 5 days later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Real quick, because I totally forgot about the guy. We should talk about the dude that hunted Grover Cleveland down and shot him. Or no, Garfield. That's who I was thinking of. Garfield, not Cleveland.
Who's that?
That's Charles Gâteau, the psychopath who tracked President Garfield down like a bloodhound and assassinated him.
Charles Gâteau, though, he wrote a whole thing that he had written like a few years ago earlier for some other president, and he just retooled the word. He just wrote Garfield in place of it, and then was like, yeah, that was it. That's me. And like, I did that. And he was like convinced he won the election for Garfield, and he kept demanding he make him the ambassador to Paris or Prague. Which I don't know why they had to start with a P.
Someplace with a P.
There are two possibilities that I could think of. Is one, he might have been clanging, which is like when people will with like schizophrenia and things like that will be like, oh, like, yeah, two European cities, Prague and Paris and
Paraguay. That's South America. Like,
I don't care. But yeah, exactly. And yeah. And I mean, second of all, I could just I know both of those are just kind of big cities. So I could just imagine him wanting a fancy.
Yeah, but he got mad that Cleveland wouldn't do it. And yeah, it was Garfield, I think, that he wrote the thing for. Or no, Cleveland he wrote it for. And Garfield's the one he was pissed at. But yeah, he shot Garfield because of it. He hunted him down and shot his ass.
So Garfield refused?
Yeah, Garfield was like, no.
But he said no instead of nothing?
Yeah.
So he got a response.
He got a response from one of Garfield's people who told him if he didn't leave them alone, they were going to kill him.
Okay.
Because he wouldn't stop bugging them. It was like Garfield's like Secretary of State or something was like, if you come near me again, I will kill you. Because the dude wouldn't stop like harassing them, demanding a cabinet position, specifically an ambassadorship to Paris or Prague.
And obviously that's the president's fault.
Mm-hmm. And that's Charles Gâteau. That's going to do it for us for tonight for the wackiest assassins. Help control the pet population, spay and neuter your pets. And you can always reach me at nerdforensics@gmail.com. You can also reach me at nerdforensics on Facebook. Or you can reach me on Twitter at camppodmillie, and that's camp with a K.
And if you want to donate to the show, patreon.com/nerdforensics.
All right. Now get out of here and don't kill any presidents.
Hey, Millie, what's that dot on your forehead?
Well, with any luck...
It's moving.
Oh.